Testing and evaluating federal programs might be an old idea, but it's getting a fresh lease on life. Agencies are using testing and evaluation earlier in the process, and that's gaining support as a potential fix for long-standing problems. For instance, the Defense and Homeland Security departments are pushing project managers to test weapons and other new technology early in the acquisition lifecycle. Federal News Radio's executive editor Jason Miller joins us to discuss this emerging trend. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Tom and Emily.
All right, so let's focus in on DOD and DHS. Why do they think that more testing is going to solve their long-standing problems with big projects?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things that have been out there for so long that we've talked about the problems. We've talked about why can't the government do it right, and what we're starting to see now. And I think specifically at DOD and DHS, and actually I think it's a growing trend among other agencies, is the idea that if you can get testing done earlier and in the development process, it's going to identify those problems, and then you can fix them sooner. I mean, this seems like common sense, right? I mean, if you think about it, it's probably something that's been done in the commercial sector for decades, if not longer. But because the idea of sooner you find problems, the better it is for the program. But as Michael Gilmore, DOD's Director of Operational Test and Evaluation, says, he's been in government for 24 years. Common sense, unfortunately, doesn't always rise to the top.
It's clear that testing in and of itself is not the reason programs get delayed. It's not the reason costs grow in programs. Testing in and of itself is not. The results of the testing, you bet. The results of the testing often lead program managers in the services and the acquisition authorities in OSD to try and fix the problems that the testing uncovers, which is what testing should do. So when people claim that testers are driving billions of dollars of cost into programs, the facts just simply don't support that claim. That claim is not factually based, period. That doesn't mean that there aren't people who strongly believe it's true, but it is not factually based. And in fact, the facts indicate the converse. The earlier that you test, the more information you get about the problems with the program, the sooner you'll be able to fix them at lower cost. That's what the facts support.
Now, Gilmore spoke yesterday at the National Defense Industrial Association's Test and Evaluation Conference in Washington. He says, you know, this is something that's been going on for decades, but starting to see some changes that's happening. I think it's one of the reasons why they think it may be the long-term answer. For example, the Army is one of the DOD services learning from its past mistakes. The Army is now testing and evaluating technology much earlier in the process through its Network Integration Evaluation Program, the NIE, and it's showing a lot of success there. But Gilmore says, listen, this is not just a matter of testing. It's also understanding what you're trying to get done. So agencies and acquisition folks need to develop a concept of operations, even a draft one, as well as a draft test and development plan, even before they come up with the requirements or release the request for proposals. So that's how early he's saying it's got to be done, not just at the beginning, but at the very beginning.
So what is DOD actually doing to do this testing more and earlier in the process?
Well, Gilmore recently submitted recommendations to the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Subcommittee on Investigations, who are doing some work on acquisition reforms within DOD. I mean, these are recommendations from Gilmore that are part of a broad set of ideas submitted to Senators Carl Levin and John McCain as part of their efforts. And it's going on both in the House and the Senate, but this is obviously the Senate's effort to improve the DOD acquisition process. Over on the House side, it's the House Armed Services Committee, led by Mac Thornberry and others, who are working on that effort. Now, Gilmore says one major area that DOD is addressing now and needs to be addressed in the future is how they develop those requirements in the first place. This, again, has been a long-standing problem, not just for DOD, but I think for every agency across government. Gilmore says requirements need to be flexible, and they need to focus on what users need to get from the technology or system.
I think engineers and scientists need to be just as involved in generating the requirements as the operators are. Certainly, the operators must be involved. The operators are the people who have been out there, engaged in the fight, trying to kill the enemy so that they aren't killed, trying to prevail on the battlefield to protect our security. So the operators obviously must play a key role in generating requirements. That's not a profound observation. But engineers and scientists must as well. And for that matter, the test community should. And the test community is composed of engineers and scientists for the most part. Because we know what the problems are. We know what the physical limitations are.
the lack of trust or lack of value in engineers and scientists has been something that we've seen across the DoD over the last couple decades. Let me give you a couple examples. The Army developed its Joint Tactical Radio System. It came up with requirements that just weren't possible, that could not, the technology is just not there yet and may never be there. And engineers knew this for decades, yet because they weren't consulted, according to Gilmore, the requirements were included in the RFP. And in the end, the program called JTRS, J-T-R-S, ended up costing something like $8 to $10 billion, and the Army really didn't get what it wanted, and many people say they wasted a ton of money. Gilmore says there's plenty of other examples, not just to pick on the Army, but they've had a couple of them. The Future Combat System is another one. They wasted somewhere between $15 and $20 billion over the last 15 or so years. And if you would have had, and he says, if you would have had some scientists and engineers included and listened to earlier on the process, some of that may have been stopped sooner and the money may not have been wasted. Now, it's not all bad news. Obviously, there are progress that's being made. Gilmore says Admiral James Winnefeld, who is the vice chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, actually issued a memo in January 2013 letting military services and agencies and organizations submit a request to what they call the Joint Requirements Oversight Council. This is led by the Joint Chiefs of Staff. When they say, hey, we need to change our requirements for this program, we need to maybe turn it down. We're trying to do too much to be successful. So they're giving basically program managers, acquisition folks, an avenue to say, hey, I think we bit off more than we can chew. Now, this concept of including engineers and scientists earlier also means DoD needs to have better qualified scientists and engineers and many more of them. Gilmore says DoD needs a technically excellent workforce to have successful projects.
Congress has granted me special hiring authority for term appointments, and I'm using it, but that is not the solution to the problem as far as I'm concerned. I know Sean Stackley is urging the Congress to grant the department special hiring authorities for scientists and engineers, and I am 100% for that. I see a need for it. I've never understood how the Department of Defense, which attempts to develop and field the most complex systems that anybody on the planet tries to get to work, can do that competently without not just a technically competent workforce, a technically excellent workforce. And I will say that we do not have today a technically excellent workforce.
Now, Gilmore says there's several reasons for that problem, including the difficulty in hiring these workers, the preferences on hiring that don't necessarily focus on technical excellence, and again, we've talked about over and over again, the overall environment for people to come to the government, the lack of pay raises, the shutdowns, and the overall just vilification of federal workers, unfortunately, says is not bringing in the people that they need. But even with all these changes, these recommendations that Gilmore submitted back to the Congress, he says what it all comes back down to is leadership. There may not be a lot of need for policy or legislative changes, but really what they need is a leadership to come in and say, we trust, we want to take on the advice of engineers and scientists, and they need, some help in requiring that testing and evaluations are done earlier in the process and ensure that it happens consistently and it's institutionalized. I think Gilmore says that's really the key. Can the leaders really change the culture, which is something, again, you can go across any topical area, financial management, technology, acquisition, whatever it is. It's always that culture change.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. Let's talk about Homeland Security for a moment. What are they doing in earlier T&E?
Right. Now, they're a little further behind than DoD because in some ways they're a newer agency. But Steve Hutchinson, the acting director of acquisition support and operational analysis, in the Science and Technology Directorate at DHS, is actually trying to bring some of his experience from the DoD to DHS. Now, Hutchinson says one of the first things he did was to improve the way the testing evaluation is the organization of his office, and basically the Science and Technology Directorate piece. Now, I caught up with Hutchinson after he spoke yesterday at the NDIA conference.
The main idea was to align the test organization to the DHS mission space. And there are five stated DHS missions, plus then the Homeland Security Enterprise, where there are a lot of systems in that portfolio. And so our main concern is to answer the so what question in terms of whether the capability satisfies a user's need out in the field, right? So we need to understand the mission context. So by aligning to mission, it gives our personnel a better understanding of the mission space, right, and how the capability is going to be used. And that will provide provide us basically a better evaluation after and test design to answer that SOAC question. We basically took the resources that we had available and realigned them into the mission space, and it just created that new structure, the six different pieces. Plus, we brought the Transportation Security Lab into the test organization, whereas before it was in a different part.
Now, Hutchinson says the organizational structure is approved, and they're filling out some of the vacant positions, so that's still a work in progress. Additionally, DHS just last month stood up its Joint Requirements Council, the JRC, versus what we hear at DOD, which is the JROC, the JROC. And the Coast Guard is leading the way there. Rear Admiral Mark Butt is the chairman for the first year, and they're going to switch around the chairs of who leads that effort, but the Coast Guard's up front. Now, this council is one of Secretary Jay Johnson's initiatives under his Unity of Effort program, which is bringing together all the users, the engineers, key decision makers around strategic programs and investment decisions. So we're not talking about at the CBP level, but at the DHS level, what matters to everyone. Now, Hutchinson also says that he set up a new way to help DHS make more efficient test and evaluation based on risk and mission needs. Now, this is beyond the organization structure. He says the goal is to get testing and evaluation done sooner in the acquisition lifecycle process, or as he puts it, he wants to move T&E to the left.
The most important question in acquisition is, are we ready to begin producing the item? And so that's all based on better testing to the left. That's why the emphasis shift left. That's also tied to the idea about the mission space, right? Better understanding the mission. Because if you answer the mission question while you're in production, that's a two-for-one deal. You answer the mission question, plus you get the technical out of your test activities. It's all part of answering the SOAT question, better informing the acquisition decision-makers, better use of the resources that we have. If we shift left, we will improve acquisition outcomes. And you know everybody up on the Hill has got a lot of attention on acquisition outcomes, and they know we're bad at it. So everything, what we can do in testing is help that way.
So Hutchinson says too often testing is done in that last 20% of the development lifecycle, and what he wants to do is move it into that first 80% of that program lifecycle. So as you can see, there's a lot going on to include more testing and evaluation sooner. And I think one could argue that while this may not be the be-all, end-all or the magic silver bullet, it will make a difference if people can understand the value of testing and evaluation sooner.
All right. Jason Miller is Federal News Radio's executive editor. Jason, thank you.
Always a pleasure.